Imperfect, aka Reena Deepthi Annabelle, and you're listening to the Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect, the podcast that celebrates and explores womanhood and motherhood. And part of that is giving you a realistic, unfiltered account of raising kids and balancing the rest of your life with that. So before I get into today's topic, I wanted to just mention Shah Rukh Khan's daughter, Sohana. Now, she has been trolled quite badly on social media, and people are calling her Kali Chudel, which means black witch, and Kali Billi. It's colorism, basically. And she said that she has been receiving comments about the way that she looks, like bad comments, since she was 12 years old. And she's calling for an end to colorism. I hear ya. You know, poor girl is 20 years old and she's having to face this. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, she's the same color as me. And personally, I don't class myself as dark. I'm just brown, regular brown color. I don't have a problem with my color. I'm very proud of it. Other people did growing up. And I've talked a lot about this, you know, the poem Brown is Beautiful. It's why I wrote it. But if you haven't checked that out, please check it out already. You can see that on my Facebook page, Mummy Imperfect, or my Instagram page, Reena D. Annabelle. You know, it's just disgusting that it just carries on, and I'm not going to stop talking about it until it stops, which hopefully it will one day. Moving on to the topic of today. Today I'm talking about something that is very important to me. I didn't actually realize how much I loved it and wanted it and needed more of it until I got to my late 20s. And the thing I'm talking about begins with an S and is currently something I'm not getting enough of, but I fantasize about having more of it all the time. It's sleep. I'm convinced I have lost years of my life in sleepless nights, and it's affected me. I went through a long phase of forgetting how to drive properly. Every week I had another speeding ticket, a fine or some other traffic offense. And then there was that time I went to an ATM and suddenly forgot my PIN that I'd had for years. Obviously, I'm not getting my beauty sleep and now need to put under eye concealer on with the garden trowel. But this is part of having kids, isn't it? And it starts from when they're born. The night feeds, which were a struggle, and more of a struggle for me with my third baby because I was 37 and already battered from sleep deprivation. My mini-me 1 and mini-me 2 are only 18 months apart, so they slept in the same room together from quite early on. And then they went through a phase of waking up in the night and coming to our bed. And sometimes I'd put them back in their own bed. Other times I couldn't be bothered and I'd just let them just get in with us. The problem was that the other child would then rock up and try and get into our bed and get vexed that someone else had got there first. And they'd literally be like, what's she doing here? So I ended up spending a lot of time back and forth putting little people back in their beds. At one point, I just thought, you know what? What the hell is this? I might as well just lie down in the hallway and just direct people to bed all night. Thankfully, things calmed down with them. Then we had another baby, Mini-Me 3. So she literally slept in a cot next to my face for the first 2 years of her life. But even that wasn't enough. She used to climb over her cot into our bed every night. Now, she's in the same room with Mini-Me 2, who's 9, and so they have bunk beds. So she's in the bottom bunk. She does not stay in it. She spends a lot of her time wandering into our room to the point where me and my husband affectionately refer to her as C-Block. I don't think I need to say any more, do I? That says it all. So she claims that she's scared in her bed, but then she walks to our room in the pitch black and she seems fine doing that. Even to get her to bed, I have to lie down next to her. And I used to have to pretend to go to sleep, like actually fake snore. It was realistic, like she bought it. But then 9 times out of 10, I ended up going to sleep myself, sometimes before she was even asleep. I was literally comatose. So my husband tried to wake me up, but that didn't work. So he just left me. And then I woke up at 2:30 a.m, still wearing a hoodie and skinny jeans and a bra, for God's sake, with my eyeliner still on. Now, this just didn't happen once. It happened a few times. Then I started getting ready for bed at the same time as the kids, just in case I fell asleep while pretending to fall asleep. So in one way it was good, because I was actually going to bed early for once, like 8:30 p.m. and I definitely needed the sleep. But it meant having no evening to myself, not actually sleeping in the same bed as my husband. Plus, it's not the most comfortable sleep with a 3-year-old kicking you in the back all night. Now, since my little one has started school, she's pretty tired, so she goes to sleep quickly and I don't have to do the whole natak of like going to sleep and stuff. So I get some time with my husband too. Sometimes he does actually say to me, are you staying the night tonight? Because my little one comes to drag me back to the bottom bunk. Yep, C block. Needless to say, I'm absolutely shattered and need professional help. And plus, my 9-year-old now is getting annoyed that my little one, that I'm just sleeping with my 4-year-old, and she wants to sleep with me too. So instead of saying, no, I'm not sleeping with anyone, you're sleeping in your own beds, I've actually said, why don't we have a nice little sleepover and join two beds together and have a midnight feast, and I'll sleep in the middle just to make everybody happy. I know, like I said, I need professional help. I also know a lot of parents are going through similar things. I don't know if anyone's promised a midnight feast just to kind of, deprive themselves of sleep anymore. But just to kind of get a little bit more info on what the hell is going on here, what parents can do to make to let their kids have a good night's sleep as well as themselves, I caught up earlier with Catherine Powell, who is a health visitor who has done a lot of sleep management work with children and their families. And this is what she advised. So I just want to start by welcoming you to the Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect podcast, Catherine. So I really wanted to talk to you to basically help me and my kids sleep better. Because but the thing is, like, I assume that everybody else's kids were being put to bed, tucked in at 8 p.m. They said goodnight to their parents, kissed goodnight, sleep well, oh, I will, mummy, and then went to sleep in their own beds nicely. But I recently realised that everybody has a lot of people have a myriad of different sleeping arrangements. Now, yeah. I know that you've worked with a lot of children and families on this issue. So how common is the whole playing musical beds every night?
I think fairly common, actually, because parents go for the easy life. You know, whatever works, they tend to fall into that habit. Mm-hmm. So if snuggling up in mummy and daddy's bed at 3 a.m. gets everybody more sleep, allegedly, they just get on and do it. But then they realise that they're not actually getting better sleep. They're getting sleep, but it's not good quality because everyone's shuffling around and kicking people. And it's not as, you know, good quality sleep.
And how much sleep do little kids need?
Very small children, about at least 12 hours. So babies and up to sort of 8-12 hours. After that, it does fall. Sort of teenagers need about 9¾ hours.
Okay.
It changes for teenagers. They physiologically change. So they go to sleep later and wake up later. So.
Okay. And then, in the ideal world, if it's holidays or you're homeschooling, that works. But in the real world, we have to drag kids out of bed.
Exactly.
It's just, I can just imagine the equivalent of a hangover. Like, I don't have teenagers yet, but I know that, you know, for example, my sister's kids go to sleep way later than my kids. They're a little bit older. But I know that mornings are a nightmare, and I don't know what people can do to kind of make that a little bit easier.
Well, that's about getting a really good routine at bedtime. Mm-hmm. They did look at starting school later for teenage children so that they could get up more naturally and then work later, but that hasn't come to fruition in any way. The best thing to do is obviously get your bedtime routines established. No blue light, obviously. That's what a lot of teenager problems are. They have TVs and phones and other equipment in their bedrooms. Not a good idea because it stimulates our staying awake hormone. Mm-hmm. So, it's not a good idea. So they did a massive study in Scotland with teenagers. So they actually looked at sort of changing the teenagers' routine, but got them on board themselves. And they had fantastic results. Their concentration got better. Their joy of life got better. They got more friends. It was really, really good. Wow. And that was around taking TVs out of rooms, mm-hmm. having half an hour wind down before bedtime. You allowed music in your room, but not blue light. So it really, really worked.
Okay, that is a really good tip, actually. Mm-hmm. With let's just
go back to the whole thing, quality of sleep, and people aren't getting the quality of sleep that they need. So I'm just going to use myself as an example here. So okay, so this is what happens in my house, right? So my so I have three children, age 11, 9 and 4. And the older two sleep in their own beds, no problem. Now, because they are older, they go to sleep slightly later, and they, you know, because there's three of them, they mess around a lot and before, you know, so I think the little one, I would like her to go to sleep at like 7:30 or even 7, and that doesn't really happen because the sisters are awake doing things, so she's just literally forcing herself to keep her eyes open. The problem is she's supposed to sleep on the bottom bunk of the bunk bed, and what happens is that I normally end up lying down next to her to get her to sleep, or my husband will read to her until she falls asleep.
Right.
And then she's asleep for a few hours, 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. every single night. She'll come to my bed. She doesn't, you know, it doesn't cry or anything anymore. Just, mommy, can you sleep with me? And then I'm like, okay. And then I go lie down next to her in the bottom bunk of the bunk bed. And that is where I sleep for the rest of the night. And, and me and my husband have had this thing, oh, you know, he's like, "You, why do you do that? You should get her to sleep and come back." I've done that, and then she comes again, and then I'm like, I get tired. I'm like, I want to go to sleep. I'm sometimes I'm like, why don't I just lie down in the hallway? Because that would just be better for everybody. If I just lay down in the hallway.
You see, you're taking the easiest route in the middle of the night because you're tired and you're weak at that time, aren't you? And you just think, whatever works,
I'll get on with it. That's it. The thing is, she used to come and sleep in our bed. She used to get into our bed every night. Yeah. Now, she's, you know, she's gotten bigger. She's not like a two-year-old anymore. She's a four-year-old. She's going to school. And, and my husband is a... you know, 6'3", you know, and I'm not exactly petite. So that really just got to the point
where then, by the sound of it.
Because, you know, tossing and turning, you know, so nobody really slept. So that was a bit ridiculous. And then, and now I'm like, okay, at least you're in your own bed. I know I'm with you and I'm not supposed to be here, but at least you're in your own bed. And to be honest with you, secretly, part of me actually likes it because it's quite, you know, it's cute and it's
she's your baby,
you know, and I'm like, how long am I going to be able to do this? And, you know, cuddly a little child. And so,
well, if it suits the family, there's no problem. It's just that if you're trying to work and manage a family and you're very tired, you make mistakes.
I'm tired, Catherine. I am so tired. And and the thing is, like, I feel like I'm not, because the thing is, when I then go and settle into her bed, you know, it's not like you fall asleep again like this magically.
No.
You know, you've got to then wind down again
and
go to sleep, or I'll end up going to the loo or whatever. And then it's settling down again. And so, and then also I'm thinking for her to be getting out of her bed every night and walking to our bed, you know, so she has to then wind down again. Is that good? Like, she's not getting, I just like her to stay asleep. But how can
basically what's happening is she's being rewarded for behavior that is not the best behavior, because as she comes in, you do exactly what she wants you to. You get out, you go to her bed, you snuggle up, and she's got her way generally. So that's what it is. It's like a reward. And it would be the same for us if we woke up and had the best experience ever. We'd do it again every night just because we like it. But what you have to then decide, if when you're ready, you don't want it to happen anymore, is to change that behavior so that she's rewarded for the behavior you really want, which is her staying in her bed and you staying in your bed. So it's about working on a rewards strategy, so that if she stays in her bed, she gets a praise in the morning or a star or whatever it is that you decide works, and then she works towards a bigger treat. So have you heard of star charts? Yeah,
I do star charts sometimes when I can be bothered, for good behavior and stuff. And and one of the the little notes on her star chart was staying in your own bed at night. That obviously didn't happen. That didn't happen. And then I was like, oh, you know what? I'm too tired. It's fine. But,
well, this is it. Yeah. But you have to choose a time when you're not so tired, or you can get even more tired for a little while. And then it falls into a better routine so that you can all catch up then.
the reason why I didn't keep taking her back and saying sleep in your own bed is because she would have kicked off. Like, she's not a child that just is a placid child, you know.
Right.
She's okay, very vocal. So she would have like, oh no, and you know, all this. And then I'm like, oh no, but the other two have to go to school in the morning.
Yeah.
And they're gonna get disturbed. So that's why I'm very scared of kind of creating a big chaotic
fuss,
environment. Fuss at night.
Yeah.
Because then
is she in her own room or is there someone else in the top bunk?
Yeah, there's her sister. It's her sister on the top bunk, my 9-year old. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Right. That is going to be difficult then, isn't it? So she needs to go to bed at least half an hour earlier than the older child, doesn't she?
Yeah.
And sleep, get to be asleep, and then the older child comes to go to her bed,
Ideally, in an ideal world,
Isn't it? That's what you're going to have to work out, how that happens, because, the reward thing, if she's going to kick off like that, is going to be quite difficult, but it's doable. You'd all have to work as a family, that's the thing, and decide when you're going to have a go at this. And she needs to be included because she's old enough to understand she needs to stay in her own bed for everybody's sake, and that's what you're going to work at. So
am I supposed to keep putting her back then?
That's the theory, yes. The best thing to do is to get her settling without you or her dad there first. Because that's what... So when she wakes up and neither of you are there, it's like us with a hangover. So how on earth did I get here? And why is mummy still not there? So she comes back and gets back to the position where she was when she fell asleep safely. So get her falling asleep on her own. So sit on a chair near her, that's fine. Don't lie down with her is better. So sit on a chair, you or her dad, and do your normal routine, but move the chair further and further away each night.
Okay.
So you're literally, and then what you can start to do is when you think she's ready is just, mummy's going to the bathroom to tidy up, I'm coming back in a minute, and always come back like you say you're going to until she falls asleep on her own, because that's what you need her to do, is fall asleep on her own, so that she, when she wakes, she's got that stored in her memory and she can do it again, so that when you put her back to bed in the middle of the night, be nice and quiet because your sister's up there and our mummy's going back to her bed. She should be able to fall asleep. It's called self-soothing. So she'll be able to fall asleep on her own.
I'm just going to read this message because I from a listener and it's a similar kind of thing. So okay, so I have two boys who both have their own beds in their own room, but neither will fall asleep in their beds. They need to co-sleep with me. They both fall asleep instantly, and then I creep out of the bed to go into my own room in the middle of the night. One or both will get into my bed. They don't cry or wake me up. They just casually get in and instantly fall asleep again. I guess I've normalized this to some extent as I'm a single parent, and at least it means we're getting some sleep, but I'd love them to fall asleep in their own beds and stay there.
Yeah. Okay.
So is that similar advice that you'd give?
Yeah, definitely. It's around the self-soothing thing, so that they've got the ability to fall asleep on their own in the right environment, because that's what you're trying to replicate. Every time they wake up, you want them to be in the same place and just be soothed in that place, rather than they're getting rewarded by going to mummy's bed. And if she doesn't mind, you know, but at some point she'll probably have to make a decision when they get to sort of too big to get in, both of them. And again, it's around working on a reward strategy.
So basically just keep taking them back and in the night, keep taking them back, and then praising them in the morning and doing the point shot or something like that.
With some children, stars are okay, but it's not, they sometimes need something a bit more visual and loud or noisy, so pasta in a jar, that's quite nice. So put like marks up a jar and put the pasta in, so you were really brilliant last night, you stayed in your bed. And it doesn't matter if they have a bad night and they we'll just work at it tomorrow. And when they get to a certain line, so rather than 5 stars in a row or a week's good work and you get X, and they have a bad day and they can never get a full week, it's better to say when you've got 10 stars, mm-hmm. we'll go to that trip on the bus or the train or the zoo or whatever it mm-hmm. is that you've promised to do with them.
Yeah.
Because they need to work to something bigger rather than just get a star in the morning. They need to work to something that they really, really want.
And so you're saying, so if it isn't the greatest night, you know, to still be like, okay,
we'll try again tonight. No, don't give them a star, but we'll try again tonight and just have 10 stars in a row rather than you've got to have a whole week of being mm-hmm. good, because children can't do that. They get, they have a bad night or for whatever reason, but don't punish them. Just say, right, we'll try again tonight till we get our 10. So.
And on the other side of the argument, yep. right, I'm going to read this message to you from another listener.
Okay.
So she says, I'm on the opposite side. I love co-sleeping. So we have 3 bedrooms and 3 king-size beds. So we're not all squeezing into a single next to the kids. We have our grown-up room, but I love the little kids' beds too. They're just so cozy and cute in the morning. It started out on necessity when the kids were little for the maximum amount of sleep. But now I just love it and they love it too. They're both finally good sleepers. But yes, you do get a kick in the ribs, but my husband takes up way more of the bed. so it sounds like, you know, it suits them and they like it. This woman's like, you know, when they're going to grow up and they're not going to want that anymore. So to just, she's just kind of cherishing that. Now, you know, a lot of cultures, co-sleeping is normal, you know, because, you know, in the Indian culture, as you know, like a lot of people do it. Like my aunt, I remember when she came over when my kids were really small, the older two, and she found it really bizarre that people in this country put their children in a separate room at the age of 6 months. She was like, why did they do that? I don't understand why they do that. Because you know, in India it's like they'll sleep next to you or in the room until they're, you know, a toddler. So she found that bizarre. So are we just being a bit mean to be like, oh, let's all, you know, I need to be sleep here and you need to sleep there? Or, you know, is co-sleeping actually, can it be beneficial in some ways?
It is beneficial. The reason we do it until 6 months is that children learn our breathing patterns, so that it's very safe. Because if they're left on their own, it's not as safe. There's a higher incidence of cot death for children that are in their separate room. So, I mean, if it's acceptable to the family, there's not an issue as long as you're doing it safely. So you shouldn't overheat your baby, and you mustn't co-sleep if you've had any alcohol or drugs, obviously. So safe co-sleeping, if it's right for your family, you know, it's a cultural thing and no one should really criticize, but you have to make the decision with the knowledge that, you know, you mustn't overheat your child, and if they're ill, it's going to be even more difficult to keep them cool enough, etc. So there are benefits to co-sleeping, and I haven't got a problem. It's just what's right for the family, really. You have to work that out.
The thing I don't get about co-sleeping is when does it end? As in,
yeah, exactly.
It seems okay. Obviously, the fact that, you know, mummy and daddy time is a bit limited, or you have to kind of go elsewhere to have the mummy and daddy time.
Yeah.
You know, it puts a bit of a downer on your love life, really. But apart from that, I'm kind of thinking, when does it stop? Like, is there an age where it's like, come on, like, you're like 8 now, you need to go to your bed, or what's healthy?
Well, I mean, personally, I think if you get better quality sleep, it's like I said in the beginning, you get a better quality sleep if you've got the right environment. So I think probably school-aged children probably need to be in their own beds so that they can shuffle about and rummage about, and you're not waking up as, I mean, we all have a deep sleep wake pattern, but you don't want to be waking up too much, because that affects the quality of your sleep and it affects your ability to learn. It affects our ability to drive safely, all those things. So, I mean, there's a lot of research around that, how sleep deprivation does impact on the rest of our life, you know, our daily life. So yeah. I think for school age children, it's probably a good idea if they can stay in their own room and get a good 10 to 12 hours sleep.
Okay. And you know, like in your experience, have you seen a real impact on families of not sleeping, kids not sleeping, and then adults not sleeping? Like how much does it affect families?
It affects them an awful lot, yeah, because it rules your life, really, trying to get the routines right. And then you're, sleep deprivation affects everything, doesn't it? So like you say, you're constantly tired, you're not making decisions properly, or you're allowing them to get away with things. Particularly the special needs children that I've worked with, you know, if they can sleep better, it actually helps their behaviour during the day. And we're seeing a lot of what we call ADHD and all those behavioural issues. I think a lot of it is around sleep, around too much TV time, not enough routine, not enough good diet. All those things impact on our ability to sleep properly, which then impacts on our behaviour. So we're forever, lots of parents are in this trap where they're not taking control mm-hmm. as a parent, you know. Mm. It even affects our eating patterns, because if we're tired, we crave carbohydrate, yes. which then affects our weight gain, which then affects our sleep, because we produce different hormones. So then we want more carbohydrates, and it's a vicious circle. So there's lots of impacts on it.
So, you know, you mentioned kids with special needs, like, yeah. Do they have more difficulties in actually falling asleep and getting into that
some
routine?
Children, yeah, absolutely. I did most of my work with autistic children, so they have sensory issues. So, and that's what you can look at for all children. So sensory issues for autistic children, either they like to be held closely or they don't like anything on them. So getting to sleep can be a real problem because the environment doesn't feel right. So right. They sometimes need heavy blankets to make them feel safe. Other times they just need the lightest blanket. So you have to work out which type of child you're working with.
Yeah. Okay. And then in terms of staying asleep, like, is it the same as everybody else, or are there things which parents need to keep an eye on a bit more?
They tend to wake early in the morning and want to, you know, sort of it can be midnight onwards and want to play, and that you see that a lot in young children. It's I'm awake now, I want to play. And yeah, it's about allowing them certain things in the room that they're allowed to play with. So a book with a small light is absolutely fine. So that for your daughter might be something that you could look at, that she's allowed to be awake, but she has to stay in her own room, and she's allowed to look at one or two books until she feels ready to fall asleep again. There's a nighttime type of clock that works so that children can see when they're allowed to get up. Mm-hmm. So they have to stay in their bed until the bunny comes to yeah. the light and off they go, you know, then they can get up okay. and do a quiet activity. The room needs to be designed for sleep as much as possible rather than just play, because lots of our rooms are multi-purpose, aren't they? So if they've got lots of toys, they think it's okay to play, whereas we'd suggested a lot of the time that a lot of the toys were put away and there was one bag that they were allowed to use in the night. Mm-hmm. so that they stayed in their room rather than going downstairs to watch telly, which a lot of them would do.
okay. You know, sometimes I've noticed with my daughter, when I say to her, why do you come and want mummy? And I know it's because of, you know, the comfort and stuff, but also she's like, oh, I'm scared. Yeah. And, you know, if I'm lying in her bed with her, and I myself, I don't know if I'm trying to be like overly sympathetic or whatever, but, you know, I'm like, there are, you know, things cast a shadow at night, don't they?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
There's a bit of light coming through the window. And I'm kind of thinking, as kids, it can be quite scary. And how do we kind of eliminate that kind of, oh, I'm scared of the night kind of thing?
It's imagination, and it can be quite distressing, obviously, for children, but it's just the reassurance Mummy and daddy are in the house, there's nothing scary. Sometimes they need a little routine where they check the cupboards and stuff before they go to sleep. And then you can just say, remember, we checked, it's not, nothing's changed. Mm-hmm. Just that reassurance, basically. Mm-hmm. But imagination is very, very vivid from about 2 years onwards. So they start having dreams where they wake up and do need reassurance, because it can be very, very realistic. So, yeah.
And this is another thing that I want to ask you about, because my eldest daughter, who's now 11, but a couple of years ago, like, she had a fever. And so I hadn't gone to bed yet, but then she was awake. She seemed like she was awake.
Yeah.
And she was talking, but it's kind of like half gibberish and
delirium.
You know, yeah. I was actually like quite,
stressed. Yeah. It's quite distressing. Like,
you know, when you watch too many horror films and then you kind of get scared of when your kid wakes at night and they've got their eyes wide open and they're talking about weird stuff. And so is that what it is? Is it delirium? And is that
with the temperature? It doesn't happen to all children, but some children that get a temperature will have that delirium, so they see things that are real to them. My own son did it, and it is quite frightening. But just again, loads of reassurance, keep the temperature down, and loads of fluids. But yeah, it is frightening.
But a friend of mine, she said that her daughter does that every day almost, but without a fever. So it's like, and this was at about like 10 years old. So her daughter will wake up, get off her bed, turn up in a different room, eyes open, start talking about something random.
Yeah.
Every night. Now
she's having night terrors then, so she won't know that that's happened. The daughter won't know that's happened.
Yeah, she doesn't know in the morning.
No, that's it. So it's different from a nightmare, where a nightmare, they wake up and they can recall everything. A night terror is something that exactly like that. She responds to something that's going on in her mind, but she's not aware of it, and she won't be frightened by it. It just frightens everyone else.
It does. Are you supposed to wake them up?
No.
How do you deal with it?
No, just take them back to bed and settle them back again. And like I say, she won't remember it. And normally it passes and they grow out of it. But yeah, it's more frightening for the parent than the child. Nightmares are different. They're frightening for everyone because she will wake up. Mm. But you tend not to have both. You have one or the other. So.
Okay. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about is controlled crying. Now, with babies, you know, I spoke to my sister-in-law the other day, and she's got a 5-month-old baby, and then, you know, she's kind of waiting, when is she going to sleep through the night? And, and everybody, that's the dream, isn't it? Okay, I'm going to put my baby to sleep and they'll sleep through the night. Now, some people I myself have tried the controlled crying method with my eldest. I strongly regret doing that. I think I read too many books, you know.
It was fashionable at the time, wasn't it?
It was a Gina Ford thing, wasn't it?
Controlled crying. Yeah, absolutely.
And I really regret doing it. And I don't know if it's something that people still do or is good, advisable, or, you know, what's your thoughts on it?
No, not really. We don't advise it at all. It's around getting them into their own soothing pattern, and that means don't let them, you can let them cry for a moment or two, not a 5-month-old, obviously that's too early, but later on when they don't need milk feeds in the night, so 8-9 months, you know, you can start to withdraw at night in the middle of the night. But again, it's about working on the self-soothing when you first fall asleep. So it's better to put the child awake in the cot and be next to them, and then, like I said to you earlier, have the chair next to the cot, but go and come back, don't just disappear because they think you've gone forever then. But yeah, if you're going and coming back quite quickly and frequently, they get to know that you're around somewhere, and you do come back all the time, but you're not there for them 100%. They need to be able to soothe. It's hard.
I know that every child's different, but approximately, like, how long does this kind of thing take of the coming back and soothing, and how long does it take for them to get it?
I normally say to a family, be prepared for a week of hell. Basically, what you can try is, you'll find that they'll fall asleep. You'll keep coming and going and coming and going for about an hour or more before they finally fall asleep, and then they may wake up again in an hour's time, and again you're going in and out a lot. Mm-hmm. But if you timed it, you'd find that the time goes shorter and shorter as the child learns what's happening and mm-hmm. is reassured by you going and coming back, that usually by day three, they're waking and falling asleep quite quickly.
Okay.
It's a week of more disturbed sleep, but then it starts to get better quite quickly.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the babies, like you said, obviously control crying and this kind of soothing thing wouldn't be appropriate for them. But then when can we realistically expect babies to sleep through the night? And, you know,
when they're on solid food and they're getting enough calories in the day, you can start to refuse to feed them in the night, just give water, because if they're thirsty they will drink water. But if you're giving milk, it's that reward therapy. It's like, yeah, I get a milk feed when I wake up. I'll do this more frequently. And that's what happens. Because parents are really concerned that they're perhaps not getting enough to eat in the day, they think, oh well, better top them up at night. And that's, again, it's a vicious circle then, because they want more milk feeds in the night, because milk feeding is easier than chewing food. So it's around looking at the diet in the day, making sure that they're getting a good breakfast, a snack, a two-course lunch, a snack, a two-course dinner, a milk feed to go to bed on. And then you can be reassured that they don't need any more food in the night. And that's when you can start to really, say, no, it's just water.
Okay, good. So just finally, I've got this other message, which isn't about sleep, but I wonder if you can maybe offer a little bit of advice.
I'll try.
So, this is the message. My kids have no sleep issues, but my 11-year-old is super clean with OCD issues. Would love to know how I handle him, as he gets upset if his brothers touch his stuff, as he thinks they have dirty hands. He has always been super clean since the age of 2 or 3. He'll never put any of his stuff on the floor. Clothes are always folded and put away. He'll even clean his PS4 controllers after each session. But I worry about him being too clean and that it will cause him more stress and anxiety.
Yeah, 11. He's probably okay. And as long as his issues don't get out of hand, he's probably going to be okay. But he'll probably need some therapy of some sort to enable him to take more unclean things into his life. Again, it's really hard. Probably need some specialist therapy at some time if they get out of hand.
But, okay.
Yeah. It would be a matter of how bad he is at the moment. And it sounds like it's manageable at the moment, but it's a bit challenging when his brothers sort of touch his stuff. Yeah.
But I do worry about this now because of COVID-19 and all the hand gel and hand washing. And now, because I'm one for the 3 second rule. If I'm a big believer, I've seen my kids
drop
things, pick it up. I don't say anything because I'm like, okay, some germs are good, and I don't want it to get overly obsessed with cleanliness, I just think you need some germs in your system as well. However, obviously you can't really do that anymore, and it is, you have to wash your hands, put hand gel. They do at school, they've got to do it at home.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't want kids growing up with OCD because of this, and that's what I'm slightly fearful of. Like, how do we kind of stop it from getting out of hand?
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. I think our whole culture has gone too far on the clean side. I mean, the adverts you see on telly, 99.9% of germs all killed. A lot of the issues around allergies are around us being too clean. I've not really thought about how we're going to stop this as an issue at the moment, but I think it's a huge thing in our society that we have to let our children get dirty, and we haven't been for the last probably 10 years. I'd say it's escalated. You see that everybody wiping, the food trays and everything, you know, with Dettol. And you think, like you, I'm very much a believer that we need some immunity of some sort before we get to school, because that's what you see, isn't it? When children get to school or nursery, they're full of cold time after time and they've got no resistance. So yeah, I don't know, I'd have to give that one some thought, how we're going to change society, because it's a huge societal thing. We're all into clean and super clean, but yeah, it's impacting on our health because we don't have the resistance and the allergies. I mean, so many babies are allergy, you know, they've got problems with all sorts of everyday things like milk, basically. A lot now.
And I guess we'll have to see how it plays out a little bit with coronavirus and keeping clean and everything. It's still quite early.
I mean, it's important. Yeah, it is important in controlling disease. But again, it's getting a balance, isn't it? And that's what I think we've lost, the balance part of it. We've gone too far one way. But I don't know how we bring the whole of society back, saying, yeah, a bit of dirt's okay.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast and giving me your time and advice. I really appreciate it.
Some really good advice there from Catherine, and I think what I'm going to do is gradually build up the energy to undertake that sleep training, because that sounds like a lot, and me and the whole family are going to have to be prepared to be extra battered for a week or two. And I think the best way for me to prepare is to check myself into a hotel for a couple of nights just to sleep, eat and watch TV. Now, this has been a dream of mine for many years. It's like the perfect birthday treat. Like, I said this to my husband once and he got well offended that I didn't want to spend my birthday with him or the kids, and he looked so sad. I actually had to say, haha, just joking. I was not joking. But listen, I'm not going to judge you if you think it's too much to keep putting your kids back in their beds, or even if you want to try and let the kids cry for a bit. You do what works for you to survive and stay sane. And if going to sleep with your kids' feet in your face is going to keep peace in your house, then keep doing what you're doing. And let's hope that they grow out of it soon. Maybe they'll wake up one day, and they might be 12 years old, and say, Mom, this isn't normal. Until then, you take care of yourself. Let me know what you think about everything that I've talked about. Are you going through something similar? Have you overcome it? What happened? Get in touch via my Instagram page, at Mommy Imperfect. It's Mommy Imperfect, but at Rina DeAnnabelle. My Facebook page, Mommy Imperfect, or email me at mommyimperfect@gmail.com. Make sure you do subscribe to this podcast and tell your friends about it too. I'm going to be back next week with another episode of the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect. Until then, take care of yourselves, stay healthy, stay sane, and get some goddamn sleep. Bye.